Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
We are back here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. Chip Patterson, Barton Simmons. Barton, National Signing Day in the rear view. I would say that you get a chance to breathe, but those 2019 offers are already going out. Recruiting, it's 12 months a year type stuff. How you doing, man?
I'm great, Chip. I'm feeling a little behind the eight ball. Our 2020 top 247 is not released yet.
Is it due like right now?
it needs to get out. Yeah, it's 2020 season already. But I'm glad 2018 is in the books. Usually by the end of the process, you're like kind of sick of following in these same guys. It was a little less redundant this year because a lot of them kind of closed up shop in December. So we just sort of zeroed in on the few five stars and all American types left. But it was a good run, man. It was signing day is not dead. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Like there's no everyone that acted like an early signing period is going to crush the second one. We had our biggest traffic day, I think ever at 24/7 Sports, or at least our biggest traffic day on signing day. And so we're, there's no lack of interest with the five stars.
The I want to throw something at you. And again, if you've clicked this, you understand that our big conversation point is going to be trajectory. We've got National Signing Day in the books. We've got so rosters starting to be reshuffled and reset. A lot of indicators that will have us either buying or selling on certain teams as we look forward in the next sort of 3-5 year windows. But I wanted to pitch this at you. So as we are, looking at early signing day versus the December early signing period versus National Signing Day, the one thing that's sort of was becoming apparent to me, and I want to know if you think that this is a trend that will continue, is that some of it's position based. I felt like a lot of the top players that we were tuning in for their announcements, it was things that almost it was a common sense, like wide receivers, cornerbacks. Like we were dealing more with the skill position players than we were necessarily with a whole bunch of top offensive linemen. Is that something that you think will continue, or do you think that that'll be a class by class situation?
A little bit class by class. Skill positions will always be a little sexier and always going to you generate a little more buzz. And also I think those guys are a little more likely to they're more dramatic.
I was going to say, isn't it something about the mentality of a cornerback or a wide receiver to want to hold out and make them work a little bit harder for your commitment?
Of course, man.
Yes. Yeah.
The top four corners in the country were uncommitted. And,
yes.
And that's what like 80% of the top 247 was signed. And the top four corners were uncommitted. So that's, what would you expect out of a cornerback? I'd almost be disappointed if they're all like shutting it down early and just calling the coach and committing quietly. No, you got to make a show of it if you're a cornerback. So yes, that was the case, and I think that'll always be a little bit the case. What's the one position that I think I'll be interested if we ever see a five-star type of quarterback wait till the second signing period, because those are the guys now. I mean, they're already in 2019, and most of those quarterbacks are already committed. Like, it's just the way that the thing goes these days is you get that quarterback locked up, and that's the extension of your coaching staff, and now we'll go to work. And so after the early signing period, one of the interesting things from the early signing period was like usually – once you get to January, if you need a quarterback, you can try to chase the couple uncommitted guys out there. But really, more than that, you're really trying to flip the committed guys. And this year, there was like three decent uncommitted quarterbacks in the country, and even those guys weren't elite players. I'm talking about decent, like serviceable.
And one of them's even going on his Mormon mission for 2 years.
Oh, I wouldn't even include him. Yeah. So that, I mean, basically there's four, yeah. and one of them was going on a Mormon mission for 2 years. Yeah. So it was sort of funny watching Alabama and Texas A&M and Florida State and all these other scrap over a kid that was probably going to go to, you know, maybe Boise State at best before all that. And also a kid in Brevin White who chose to go to Princeton instead of Alabama. So it was, if you're a good quarterback and you're not happy with your options in December of 2018, hold off, brother, because you will have other options. I promise you.
Anything else stand out or linger in your mind as we sort of put National Signing Day to bed here on the podcast side? You were a part of you got to talk to a lot of coaches on National Signing Day. You know, I know that you've told me before that you're so into it that sometimes by National Signing Day you're just trying to put the pieces in the puzzle and just frame that sucker and get it out of here. You know, what's anything surprise you or anything still stand out?
Well, I mean, look, Georgia's finish in December. I've said this is sort of my line I've been using in a lot of places, but Georgia's finish in December in the early signing period was perfect. Like they won all the battles they had to win. They even won a couple people didn't realize they were in the mix for. It was a statement shot across the bow finish in December. Well, then you get to January and the February signing period, and they really had three, maybe four spots left in their class. So what's the perfect finish that can come up for those three or four spots? They hit it. Like, they hit the perfect finish. Again, I mean, Kirby Smart is, I'll give, you know, this is maybe a little spoiler alert for some of my my buy stocks, but man, Georgia is, they are, I mean, this is real. Like, this is not some like, oh, they got some momentum on the recruiting trail this year and they, you know, they hit it perfectly. You know, this is an Ole Miss in 2013. Like, this is real. I was very impressed with the way the Bulldogs closed.
Okay. Well, let's jump right in right there, because I did not have Georgia in my portfolio because I think the price is too high. I just,
right.
I think that we're talking about a Georgia program. Like, if you haven't jumped in now, it's too late, because this was a team that just played for the national championship. They just have been killing it on the recruiting trail. And I kind of feel like, when you're looking at the Bulldogs, like that, like I wasn't going to put Alabama, I wasn't going to put Ohio State in this buy sell thing, because I just don't think there's much debate to it. Like, I think that they are the class of college football, and I'm with you, man. Like, this is not Ole Miss. This is not going to be a flash in the pan. When you look at the staff, when you look at what they're doing on the recruiting trail, when you look at something that you've pointed out here, just the general demographics of where the best high school football players in the country are coming from. Like, there is absolutely a reason to believe that Georgia, like Georgia, it's so funny because it seems like Georgia has, and I hope I don't rub anyone the wrong way with this one, but it's like Georgia has finally become what I've always thought the fan base has imagined its football program to be.
Right. I agree. And I agree. I understand what you're saying on the stock price being high. So, and that's, you know, that's what we're doing. We're buying and selling stocks. And this is the comparison I make with Georgia. So, like, I got a buddy who's my stock guy, right? Like, he's like this genius guy who's dialed into that world. And I remember, like, in 2010, it was like that range. I don't know exactly the date, but it was like that kind of range. And I was trying to get a couple of you know, insider tips there. What should I be looking at? And he was like, he gave me a couple like obscure stocks that I had never heard of. And then he also was like, in Google, by the way, like, you, Google's like, I know it's like it's, you know, $300 a share or something, but jump on, and like, because like there's still a lot of value in Google. You know, Google's now sell, like trading at like $1,000 a share or something.
That was like before they bought YouTube and like have continued to just grow.
Yeah, massive. It hadn't even really taken off to a certain like degree. And so that's kind of the way I see Georgia right now. Like, yeah, you're getting Georgia at a really high price, but if you look at what they're doing at the quarterback position, if you look at what they're doing from a recruiting standpoint, if you look at what they're doing from the offensive line standpoint.
Ooh, love it.
I mean, if and then you know Kirby Smart is going to get freaks on defense. They're beating Alabama on like defensive studs. Like we all seen what Alabama lines up, and these are the guys Alabama wants, and Georgia's winning them. And as you mentioned, the state of Georgia to me, like if I can pick one state, I want the top 20 guys from this state, and that'll be my roster. That'll be my signing class. Then it's really not a hesitation to me. I'm picking the state of Georgia. Like, yes, there's like the number 150 guy in the state of Florida is better than the 150 guy in the state of Georgia. But I think the top 20 in Georgia is better in California, Florida, Texas. Like, I think those, you know, you got quarterback play is really strong right now. You've got really good raw elite talent, but it's also pretty well coached. It's not maxed out. So all these reasons. And then, obviously you look at what there's actually on the roster. True freshman quarterback returning. You got DeAndre Swift coming back in the backfield. You've got
three or four of the offensive starters, and maybe like five of the seven in the rotation.
Oh, the offensive line is loaded. And I think Kirby Smart has just really got the state on lock. So I think that Georgia is it going to become a regular national title contender? I think in a lot of ways, this is going to make the job tough for Dan Mullen's getting a tougher Florida gig than Jim McElwain got by a long shot because of Georgia. Jeremy Pruitt's getting a tougher Tennessee gig than Butch Jones got. So I think that this is, there's going to be some challenges there for the rest of the conference because Georgia just looks like a runaway freight train right now.
So let's keep it right there because this one's like right now at this moment, and like I wish I could have done it maybe right at the end of the regular season. I'm selling South Carolina.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
You know, I see the way the market's moving. I see Dan Mullen arriving in the SEC East. I see that 9 wins. And I'm like, man, I don't know if this is sustainable. I think that 9 wins South Carolina is about as high a price as you're going to get given the way the next 3 years look in the SEC East. So there have been praises sung of Jake Bentley on my part on this podcast, and I thought that they exceeded expectations. Their Vegas over-under win total heading into the year was at 6. They finish at 9. I'm thinking that now is a really good time to unload my South Carolina Gamecock stock.
I don't know if I'm there with South Carolina because, look, I do think they've got to make sure that they've got a succession plan at quarterback. And I also don't know that Jake Bentley got a lot of preseason hype last year that I'm not sure he lived up to. So I'm not there yet in saying Jake Bentley is some sort of revolutionary kind of quarterback, but he is a good quarterback. And I think that it feels like Tennessee they're inheriting a tough gig at Tennessee. Dan Mullen's got an offensive system he's got to implement. George is good, I think we feel like Vanderbilt is sort of back to being just sort of you can count that win if you're elite. I'm more bullish on South Carolina than you are because I think here's the reason. I think that they really do evaluate at a high level with that staff. I think they get in. I think they are going to overachieve.
They're going to overachieve regularly based on the talent that you see on the roster.
I do. Yeah. I do. And I think they've got a foundation. I think they got a little bit of a head start on Tennessee and Florida. Maybe not Florida because Florida didn't – like it's not like that Dan Mullen's inheriting some total disaster from a talent standpoint. But they got a little head start on Tennessee. I think South Carolina's stock can I think it's still got a little upward mobility. I don't think it's going to – this isn't one you're going to get rich on. I don't think they're going to go, you know, they're not going to be playing the national title games. And I don't think you're going to be able to retire on your South Carolina stock. But I think you'll be able to get a few more dividend payments out of this one over the next few years. And it's really about, again, having a quarterback in place and having a recruiting plan that I've been impressed with and that I think has the ability to overachieve expectations.
Okay. Do you have Florida on your on your sheet?
I'm not buying or selling Florida. Yeah. I'm just holding
on Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's my stock down in the SEC though. I'm shorting LSU stock.
Oh, triple sell. I wrote sell, sell, sell. Absolutely triple sell LSU. Fire, like whatever. Just unload it all. Absolutely unload all of the LSU stock that you have. We can revisit this sucker when it bottoms out. But man, nah. Zero indications on the futures market that this is going to be profitable anytime in the next 5 years.
Like, I remember when Ed Orgeron got the head job, I think I even wrote this in a story or something, like win-win, like no lose situation, because here's what's going to happen. Worst case scenario, they just keep on kind of being average. Maybe they slip to like an 8-4 level program, and the next coach that comes in inherits a loaded roster, because what we know about Ed Orgeron is he's going to recruit, and he's going to recruit at a high level. And here we are. And in the 2018 recruiting class, LSU put together its worst class at 15th in the country since 2002.
Mm.
And I know 15th in the country doesn't sound bad, and it's not. It's a good class. It's a class that most people would be really excited about. But I've seen this story before. Like, when Oregon was recruiting at like top 10, top 11, like that sort of 12-9 range in the recruiting rankings under Chip Kelly, they were playing at a really high level. And when Mark Helfrich took over, the dip happened. It wasn't dramatic. They went from like a top 12 class regularly to like a top 18, 19 class regularly. And that doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're bringing in three straight years of top 19 classes behind three straight years of top 12 classes, that's a real dip in talent level. And so I think if LSU continues to dip a little bit from a talent perspective, what do they have to hang their hat on? I think Dave Aranda, they're paying their defensive coordinator $2.5 million. You know, they've got, I just think suddenly there's been some sort of staff turnover, and we still now we don't have that like insane first round running back to lean on. Now they've got to lean on their wide receivers. That's been like their company line. Like, we're gonna get the ball to our wide receivers. Okay, that sounds good. But when was the last time you were able to do that?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, man, I don't know. I'd be a little nervous if I'm holding a ton of LSU stock right now.
Yeah, I've got it on my sheet as a triple sell. Can't stand by. Can't stand by. And like, there's, you know, the spirit and the atmosphere of LSU football is something that, like, and maybe it's my, you know, maybe it's my age or just sort of like when my, you know, my peak years of college football fandom have mostly been times where LSU football has been really, really good. And there's just been loads of NFL talent coming in and out of there. And the, you know, the atmosphere down in Death Valley is like one of the, you know, coolest in college football. So you mentioned since 2002, like it is a reality that I don't have a lot of reference for. And I know that there's certainly pre-Nick Saban were long stretches of where, you know, the older LSU fans can talk about how frustrating it was. And man, college football comes in cycles, and I just think it's now's about to be in the big picture of LSU football. I think that a peak has come and gone. We're going to be sliding back here for a little bit. I'm with you, man. I've got that one as a triple sell. I've got All right, I've got another one in the SEC West, and I've got about a handful on here of stocks that I wanted to consult with my advisors, and you are my advisor for these purposes.
All right. What do you get? What's your other SEC one?
Where are we feeling about Texas A&M?
I had a feeling you might be going there. So this is
I wrestled with this one. I thought about it really hard, and I don't know.
Right. No, I think that's very fair to have some concerns there. Here's where I am right now, and I'll say this: look, after the presser, I was a little down on it. I was, you know, the Jimbo Fisher hire felt like there was this sort of, oh, now we're going to compete for national titles. But that felt like a reach to have that expectation. So I was sort of ready to start selling that stock. And I'm now circled back around to feeling like there's value there. And I actually have it on my buy list. Here's why. I think Jimbo Fisher has hired well. He's put together, you know, it took time to get that staff squared away, but he's got it now, and it's a good staff of assistant coaches. There was also a period there where it looked like recruiting was going to be a struggle, but they really closed
well.
Strong.
Ooh, Jimbo style.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Jimbo's a closer. Coffee's for closers. And then I think now as we look at moving forward, like 2019, A&M is killing it right now in 2019. They got a ton of momentum in the state of Texas in 2019. And I'm not buying a stock based strictly on like the recruiting, but I do think that they've got – like they have good players in place on defense. Mike Elko comes in. They don't. It's still a four-man front. It's still an even front defensively. They don't have to like change. They don't have to blow things up. Jimbo Fisher comes in. He does have a couple talented quarterbacks to work with. Nick Starkel is competent and can be that bus driver you need. Kellen Mond has the upside if Jimbo Fisher can pull it out of him. They did get a kid in this class in James Foster, who I don't love. I don't think he's like a definite NFL guy, but I think he definitely has NFL potential. So if anyone could pull it out of him, it's Jimbo Fisher. So suddenly I look and I feel like there's like plenty of reason that they can stabilize this thing. And Jimbo can stabilize a program. And so I think as we look at Arkansas, as we look at LSU, as we look at Ole Miss, there's opportunity there for them to kind of continue to climb the ladder. And I think, sure, why not?
Like, yeah. And that's, I think that what else is happening in the SEC West kind of, pairs into my reason for optimism, because, a Jimbo Fisher coached Texas A&M team is not going to bottom out. Like, they're very well, and like we saw, like Florida State damn near bottom out this year, and that was with him checked out for the whole last month of the season. I think that you know, you're looking at a situation where with the staff that he's put in place, and the talent that is there, I kind of feel like base, you know. They said 8-4 is not good enough for Kevin Sumlin, and I kind of feel like 8-4 is a worst case scenario right now. And if that's your situation, and you just gotta close the margin for a couple of games a season, and then all the difference in the SEC West between 8 wins and 10 wins is very, very small. That those margins are very small. It's very hard to overcome them, but at the same time, you know, if you can. Then all of a sudden, it's a very different atmosphere around the program. You know, everything else could change really quickly. How about this? I'm just gonna say track it. I'm gonna keep tracking this one. See what happens. But I do like your inclination to buy, because when Texas A&M had you know, we were talking about our sort of read of the press conference. The early signing period was really, really tough on Texas A&M. To see the narrative flip certainly, if you're a Texas A&M fan, is encouraging. But if you're someone who's trying to get a good read on it, I think it's worth taking note moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's, again, like, I think when you look at – because I think recruiting trajectory is really relevant. And I think when it's interesting to see how quickly was the traction going to take hold in the state, considering Jimbo Fisher comes from Florida, considering he's bringing a staff that wasn't a, like when Matt Rhule came to Baylor, he hired a bunch of Texas high school coaches. When, you know, Tom Herman came to Texas, he kept his entire Houston staff. Like, so how quickly was that? Like, I needed to see it. I needed to see that there was that this staff was going to be able to quickly take hold, and I've seen it. They are, and they, I think that they're going to be very, very aggressive and find some real success.
All right, take us anywhere that you want to go. What you got?
I'm going to give you one to short here. I'm going to short USC.
Whoa. I don't even have them on my sheet. Wow. Wow.
This is, I think, again, this is a little weird to say this coming off of a National Signing Day where they were one of the stories of the day, jumped into the top five of the national rankings. But I think the price remains a little high on USC. I think the price continues to be inflated because they're USC, because the rest of the Pac-12 South hasn't really given them much of a challenge. But now I think as you look at Chip Kelly coming to town, I think, you know, as there's been some, you know, a couple coaches left the staff this year at USC. They lost the running backs coach. They lost their, you know, Tyson Helton went to Tennessee. You know, there may have been a couple others I'm thinking about. But I just think Clay Helton, as much as he's liked and respected on that campus and in that program, and he is, I know that for a fact. But, like, why – I know that last year's schedule was tough, and I know they had a lot of injuries, but, like, I think that there's no excuse for them to not put together a better season last year. I think that they it's just like they feel like they continued to underachieve, I guess.
Fair. No, 100%.
And we're sort of giving them this benefit of the doubt,
yes,
constantly.
Yeah.
And now I think they finally have a long-term challenge in the South with Chip Kelly, because I'm fairly confident that Chip Kelly is going to have UCLA humming within the next 3 years. And that's – how does that cut into USC's market share? So I just – this is really a bet on, it's almost like an indirect bet on UCLA that Clay Helton is not going to be able to keep pace quite as well as the tone that Chip Kelly sets.
US in the college football playoff era, we have now had four college football playoffs. In the college football playoff era, USC consistently has had probably one of the 5 to 7 most talented rosters in the country and still does not have a playoff appearance. Period.
Yes. Like, in the past 2 years, they've had a quarterback that is very possibly going to be like the number one overall pick. Like, it's when you got, I mean, what's the excuse?
Yeah.
You know, well, offensive line, like, injuries. I mean, a lot of teams have offensive line injuries.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, people need to stop crying about offensive line injuries. If we're talking about winning national championships, everyone is down to their freshman offensive lineman. You just got to make sure he's ready to play.
Yeah, I mean, there's been freshman offensive linemen starting for every national champion in the past, like, well, at least two. But, I mean, I remember last year, I think all four of the – playoff teams had a freshman offensive lineman starting, and this year there was absolutely two true freshman offensive linemen starting head to head in Alabama, Georgia. So, like, it's not like impossible to win without like some loaded deep offensive line group. And I just think what's the next excuse going to be for USC? So it's time for them to sort of put up or shut up. And I think the the clock is ticking down on that, with Chip Kelly sort of lurking in the shadows over there.
You're going to love this next one, because I kind of feel like this is stock that you've been holding longer than anyone else, and I still feel like the market hasn't reacted. But after seeing, especially I was, you know, flipping through, as of course, as part of this, I was flipping through all the recruiting rankings. I still think there's a lot of good value to buy Washington.
Yeah, I almost had them on mine. I agree with that.
That's I was saying UCLA buy, and then I said Utah buy really low. This feels like a great opportunity for Utah to just keep humming at 9-4. Just keep, because like this year was the year where everything went sideways for Utah, and they sustained it and still made a bowl game. You know, like I don't expect that to be a sign of trajectory, but I think that you might be able to get low price. And so, no, I'm sitting here, I'm sitting here with those plays, and I'm like, man, I didn't put USC sell, but if I'm buying UCLA and Washington, then I do not have have high expectations for USC. So I think I'm right there with you.
And to your point on Washington too. So they've got, like, listen to this quarterback room they're building here. So they got Jake Browning this year, and I don't know if Jake Browning is planning on leaving. He's a junior this year, right?
Yeah.
So I guess he has the opportunity to leave for the NFL draft. I think he's probably not good enough to leave for the NFL draft. I think he's probably should stay for his senior season. But you might have sort of a JT Barrett, Dwayne Haskins situation over there. Then you got Jacob Eason. He'll sit out this year. Will be able to compete for the job the following year. That's a first round talent. Whether he's a first round player or not, he's a first round talent. Then you this year's signing class, they signed 2 4-star quarterbacks. One was an Army All-American. One, I think, was an Under Armour All-American. But they both were, like, they're both 6'4", 210 plus, huge arms, like just dudes. And then you've actually got, in the 2019 class, they've got a kid committed out of the state of Washington that I think is probably a better just pure thrower than all those guys, with the exception of maybe Jacob Eason. So you're loading up a quarterback room at Washington. You got Chris Peterson, who's one of the just best pure coaches out there. And they're just plugging along, recruiting. Again, they're in that sort of Oregon range that Chip Kelly brought Oregon to, where they were just recruiting sort of these top 12 classes, but getting the guys that they liked. I think Washington is – they're another team that's really building for the long haul here. I think Washington is a buy stock for sure. I'm with you there.
Jake Browning will be a senior this year, so it'll be straight from Browning to Eason.
Yeah. So that makes a lot more sense.
Doesn't it seem like every year defensively they're just like rock solid?
Yes. Yes. And they continue to recruit really well at that side of the football. They're always going to be good on defense. That's like a buy and hold. Never sell your Washington stock. Just hold on to it.
And that's what I'm saying, know, is I feel like you've had it since 2015 or since like 2016. Right. And you've just been holding on to it like, oh, yeah, another dividend payment. Thank you, Chris Peterson.
Yeah, that's my Berkshire Hathaway, where it's just like, look, man, just don't. I'm just going to hang on to it. And whatever happens to the rest of the market, you're going to keep getting your returns on Washington.
All right, so I've got another consult with the advisor one.
What's up?
How are we feeling about Stanford right now?
Stanford had the number one quarterback in the country that redshirted this past year. They had KJ Costello that they finally settled on late in the year that should continue to develop. They had their starting left tackle last year was a true freshman. Who got injured halfway through the season and didn't finish things out, but was really good when he was in. Foster Sorrell is another true freshman who was the number two offensive tackle in the country. Walker Little, the other one that started, was the number three offensive tackle in the country. Like, those guys will both be there. I guess what my point is here, like, they've had really good, if though they've been small, they've had really good recruiting classes the past couple years. those guys start to come of age here now. And I think the thing we've been missing is, you know, what's going on at quarterback. Now I think they should be in a position where they can settle in at quarterback a little bit. And again, I think you can count on their defense. You can count on their offensive line. So I'm not throwing my life savings at Stanford, but I think that's a good one to throw in your IRA portfolio. You know, like I think that they're going to give you some solid returns here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, to your point, 39 this year, but I mean, number 14 the year before, number 16 the year before, number 13 back in 2014.
And they were the number 14 class with 15 signees.
Yeah, so it was just like all studs.
Like that's a if you project that out to a 25-man class, you know, then that's competing for the number one class in the country.
All right. So maybe there is some value.
So then, maybe, all right. So if we're finding, or if I'm thinking there's some value in Washington, and if I'm thinking that there's some value in Stanford, then we got to find somewhere that there's
Washington State.
You got to sell a Pac-12 North stock.
Yeah, it's Washington State. I've got it on here. I sold Washington State stock when Mike Leach left for Tennessee for an hour.
Right. Yes.
When Leach went overnight to go take what he thought was going to be the Tennessee job, I was like, oh, well, this has been a fun run.
I mean, poor Mike Leach. Like, that's just brutal. Like, you leave for literally an hour and you're like, and hey, more power to you. I mean, you're going from Washington up in the Pacific Northwest, tucked away where no one sees you, and you're going to Tennessee and the rugged SEC, and like the move makes sense. I don't begrudge him the decision, but basically, like, because they made that hire, the AD got fired. Like, they're like, oh, you're gonna hire Mike Leach? Nope, come on back home, buddy. Like, we've had enough of your shenanigans, and now you have to go tail between your leg back to your team. And what do you say to those guys? Like, hey, I just was fixing to leave, and because I you know, it was a better gig. How do those guys buy in at this point? And plus,
Alex Grinch gone.
The secret sauce has been Alex Grinch all along, and yeah. So now he's gone. So I think you got to sell Washington State.
Yeah, that was one of the first Pac-12 stock decisions that I made when I sat down with this. And I mean, it's like, look, like, and like the other thing is just even in the, you know, trajectory of the way that I view these teams, and I think that this was the year for Washington State to peak, and they did, right? Like, you don't expect a Washington State to contend for a Pac-12 title on a regular basis, but what you can hope if you're a Washington State fan is that the right group of players comes together, a couple good classes, and you know, you kind of work your way up to contention, and then there's going to be a step back, and I don't know when the next run up is going to be, but it kind of feels like that window of a peak has already come and gone.
I agree. All right, I got a group of five buy and a group of five sell for you.
Oh,
they're a little bit related in some sense.
All right.
I'm gonna buy FIU, I'm going to sell FAU.
Oh, this is getting some very good value if it works out on both accounts.
Yeah. So, all right, everyone, FAU has been sort of the darling of college football. And spoiler alert, so we're putting this out on Wednesday. I've also got a story coming out today on FIU. I did talk to Butch Davis. And maybe this is sort of influencing my decision here.
I appreciate your honesty.
So full disclosure, no insider trading, you know. But what's like the way I see it, FAU just had like a historic season, right?
Yeah.
And it was this sort of rapid rise to the top, and. Hey, it was impressive to watch, and they were fun to watch, and all that stuff. But how long does this Lane Kiffin just sort of flirtation with chaos go on, right? Like, there's I get that Lane Kiffin is sort of in his element and he's doing what doing it the way he wants to do it and all these sort of things. But I don't think this has like longevity to it. I don't think the approach he's taking has longevity. I also think when you look at, you know, how long is Chris Kiffin, the defensive coordinator, going to be there? I don't know, but I think he's an important piece of that success over there. Kendall Briles, who I feel very comfortable saying was a big part of their success there as the offensive coordinator, is
gone.
It left for Houston. So is there a little drop off there? You know, they've got I believe they're replacing the quarterback this year.
Yeah, I think they lose a little Drizzle, but they've still got Devin Singletary, the really good running back.
Okay, so they still got the run game impact. But like, I just think that they kind of caught lightning this year, and you know, I would think they'll still have a good season next year. But I just think if we're talking long term here, there's going to be some diminishing returns here over the next few years, and that's a part and partially just sort of looking at Lane Kiffin's history and thinking there's going to be some sort of, and probably maybe we should factor in the fact that like Lane Kiffin, how many more years is he even going to be there,
dude? Listen, FAU stock might as well be the value of Bitcoin. I'm not touching it. Like, I'm not buying in. I'm not selling. I will watch from the sidelines with my popcorn in hand because I don't have the stomach to deal with that kind of volatility.
Well, but also think of it this way: like you're buying it out after a 10-win season, and what's realistically the best case scenario for FAU? Like, are they just going to become, is Lane Kiffin going to stay there, and FAU just become some group of five powerhouse where they're just every year, you know, bringing in 10-win seasons? I think if they get another 10-win season, at best they get two more, and then Kiffin, there's no chance he's still there.
No, he's out.
So and then what happens? Like, I don't know. So with that said, I'm going to buy a bunch of the FIU stock because that's a coach in Butch Davis who, look, he probably has aspirations to get a bigger gig. But he's 60 something. He's how many big gigs does he get to really have a realistic opportunity for? This might be a situation where he just settles in and just has a nice little sort of moonlight to his career in FAU. And so FIU. So and in addition to that, they just went from 3 wins to 8 wins, and no one is even paying attention. And that's tied for the most wins in school history. And they did it in part by just like coaching those guys up. Butch Davis is for you know, he actually has a really solid, sound track record. I mean, the guy won, you know, he took the Browns to the playoffs. You know, he took Miami on probation to the number two team in the country and set it up for Larry Coker. There were the issues that they faced off the field at North Carolina, but they were rolling on the field. So there's all kinds of reason that he actually has this thing set up for success. They just recruited the number 66 recruiting class in the country, which is the best in program history and a better class than UCF and FAU. Like, I really think like that FIU is in a position to really maintain this for an extended period of time.
Let me pitch this at you. That could be a Frank Solich-esque type situation.
Great call. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we're like, what has that Ohio football been? 8 wins. You know, just like rock solid, steady, above 500 in conference play, 8 wins. And like Butch could maybe take them even further because I think that Conference USA probably is maybe a little bit more winnable than the MAC. I don't know if I would back that up, but the way that Conference USA membership has been changing so rapidly over the last like 4 years, I think that there's not as much stability there in general. But like that same idea where, you know, Frank Solich, you know, was getting top 10 teams at Nebraska, but you know, has sort of seemed like now in his 70s, he's like, nah, I'm gonna coach out winning football here at Ohio. And I could see that happening with Butch Davis for sure.
And also think about the fact that like Frank Solich is doing it at, you know, in what is it? Is it Athens, Ohio?
Yeah.
And Butch Davis is doing it in South Florida. Like there's always going to be talent there. Like recruiting's never going to be a problem down there. And you got a guy that knows how to do it. So I actually think FIU is, you know, it was this year where like, if not for this crazy year where UCF was playing a national title game and USF was competing, you know, for a group of five play, bowl bid and all this stuff. And FAU had this huge cycle up and meanwhile, Florida State, there's all this nonsense going on there. And all, you know, there's all this stuff going on in the state. Miami was having a
Jim McElwain death threats.
right. Shark pictures and everything else. Yeah. And then like FIU, just you look up and at the end of the season, it's like, whoa, wait a minute. FIU won 8 games.
Yeah.
Jeez. So, you know, I think there's, it was a weird year that no one paid attention to this, but that's actually really of note.
Can I take us to the Big Ten? I've got a lot of action in the Big Ten.
Come on.
I don't know which one you want to hit first, but
I mean, I'm very interested in knowing which direction you're thinking on. I think the most intriguing team, which I'm sure you're on, is on your list somewhere. What's your Michigan?
Sell. Yeah, sell Michigan.
You're selling.
Yeah, and I'm also selling Michigan State.
I really teetered on buying Michigan.
Wow.
Because I feel like everyone's selling Michigan.
Yeah, they are, for sure.
And so I feel like we just watched them win. What did they win? 8 games this year. And there's all that, now all of a sudden there's like reports that like the, you know, Tim Drevno is like a problem on the staff, and like, you know, they've had all this staff turnover, and I've heard Pep Hamilton's not always cracked up to be, and like there's just all this like chaos surrounding the Michigan program. And then to add fuel to the fire, they didn't even finish inside the top 20 in the recruiting rankings this year in 2018. And yet I kind of circle back, and I think because everyone's selling, I feel like maybe there is value here in Michigan, because look, let's go to the beginning of the year last year and reevaluate what the expectations were for Michigan. I think everyone was saying, oh, this could be the year where Michigan surprises people and is ahead of schedule and wins, you know, goes to the playoffs because they're just that talented. But probably it won't happen. Well, it didn't happen. It shouldn't have happened. It wasn't supposed to happen. But they were that talented, and all that talent is coming back. All that young talent is coming back. Can they get quarterback figured out? It's either going to be Brandon Peters or Shea Patterson if he's eligible. And you would think there is some sort of upgrade there. And let's not forget how close they were to the playoffs 2 years ago. They were like inches away from the playoffs 2 years ago. So I think the Michigan's death has been greatly exaggerated or whatever. Like that's to me what this is about. Like if it doesn't happen this year, then yeah, we're, you know, obviously maybe it's too late and you're holding on to bad stock. But I still think there's a possibility that this year is a really good year for Michigan, and suddenly like the Jim Harbaugh hype train returns in full force.
There was a list of the top top prospects that Michigan had for official visits for the Ohio State game. Nick Petitfrere and Jamar Chase were on the list, but it was like 7 prospects that were official visits for your biggest rivalry game. They were, you know, ones that Michigan was in on, and I think every single one of them signed elsewhere.
Yeah, that's not good.
I mean, I'm with you because I am kind of on this. Michigan's going to be pretty, like, I think that this season could be a good season for Michigan football. But I think that when you make a lot of noise in general, and then there's going to be a loud response. And I mean, remember how quickly things turned in San Francisco? Like, we went from playing in the Super Bowl to just like busting at the seams.
No, there's a burnout factor with Harbaugh.
And admit,
yes.
And I got to say, the burnout factor is probably part of my decision making, as is my decision to buy Penn State.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
I think that when you get through that first cycle and then you just continue to do well on the recruiting trail, I don't know if I believe that this is going to be a program. I believe it's an offense that can continue to be explosive without Joe Moorhead, and I believe it's a program that's building out the kind of program depth to make a run at Ohio State every single year. And I think that the premier rivalry in the Big Ten East is going to be Ohio State, Penn State, with Michigan sort of being like, those games are still going to be awesome as they've always been, like even in, you know, Brady Hoke years. But I think that in terms of the stakes and the quality of team that we're looking at, the best two teams in that division for the next 3 to 5 years are going to be Ohio State and Penn State, with me thinking that Michigan State takes a step back and Michigan takes a step back.
Yeah, I will say, like, Penn State keeps on creeping up in the recruiting rankings, and James Franklin, I think every year James Franklin figures out how to compete at this highest level even more so. Like Urban Meyer's been doing this for like 20 years now, basically. Like, I don't know, how long was he at Florida? How long has he been at Ohio State? Like, he's been doing this for a while.
His first title was 06, so that was 12 years ago.
Yeah. And James Franklin is in what, are we, like, year 4 or something now at Penn State. Like, yeah, he's been a head coach for 3 additional years behind that at Vanderbilt, but like, that's a different world. Like, he's just now learning how to do this, and I think he's such like a self-evaluator that they're going to keep getting better, and I see the recruiting keep creeping up, and that's going to help their depth, and that's going to help their, you know, the guys they trot out on the field. You know, it'll be interesting. Now, you know, there's a little bit of victim of their own success with you know, Josh Gattis going and taking a co-OC job at Alabama, you know, Joe Moorhead getting a head job and taking Charles Huff with them. So like, there's all, you know, this is the first time I think in a while that there's been a lot of turnover now. Like, the staff looks very different. And so, I think
the personnel, like, I think that they've done a good enough job that the brand of athlete that you need to go toe to toe with Ohio State, like, for Wisconsin, you're basically going contrast to styles. But I think that the athletes, on the Penn State roster are like, Penn State's roster, when they get off the bus, looks like a team that can go toe to toe with Ohio State.
No, I agree. No, I agree with the buy. I think that Penn State, it's just, you just have so much confidence that they're going to keep on rolling. I'll give you another Big Ten buy, and it's a little bit of a buy high here.
Nebraska.
Well, yeah, I'll take some Nebraska stock.
Always,
of course. Like, you know, I'm on that train, but I'll also buy I'll buy Wisconsin too.
Ooh.
And like in that sort of say, like, I almost want to just go ahead and like and buy like an index fund on the Big Ten West, you know, like,
what about Purdue? I've got Purdue on my consult with your advisor.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like the whole Big Ten West is like about to start just sort of being a better division, and Wisconsin, I get that, like, okay, I'm saying I'll buy Wisconsin. Oh, well, nice one, man. Like, that, you're telling us a lot. They're just won 12 games or whatever. But Wisconsin, to me, has been like Boise State. Like, everyone's like, oh, cute little team over there. But they're not really national title contenders because they don't play anybody out of conference. And the Big Ten West is garbage. And, what, you know, whatever. Like, yeah, Wisconsin's cute little story. But I think Wisconsin is about to turn the switch to being a national title contender legitimately for a couple reasons. One is, you know, they've got, like, Wisconsin football is built on the offensive line, and this offensive line is so loaded. They've got all these guys coming back. The guys behind them are really good. And they're about to just start turning on. They got a sophomore running back coming back that's going to be a Heisman Trophy, you know, candidate, if not finalist, if not a winner. And then, you know, quarterback, they've been recruiting pretty well there, all this stuff. So, and then on top of that, I do think Nebraska is going to help elevate that division. I think suddenly you're going to start having some, you know, Minnesota is going to be better. Iowa's always going to be solid. Purdue, as you mentioned, is going to be like, and so I think suddenly they're going to have start having some decent wins on their resume. And I think Paul Chryst is one of the best in the country. And I think Wisconsin makes it to the college football playoffs within the next 2 years. And I think they, you know, they're getting closer to the point where they've got the talent to actually compete at that level. And by the way, their 2019 class is about to be absolutely stacked. And for Wisconsin standards, like, we're not used to seeing them recruit top 10 classes. No. This one will be a top 10 class, I think.
Wow.
And I think that's just sort of plays into my trajectory there for the Badgers.
So does that mean that we sell Iowa stock?
Maybe. I was thinking about it. Like, where's just, you know, like, you, like, where's the room for them?
Right.
You know, I don't know. Like, I just feel like, you know, Iowa stock's one of those that's just is always going to be sort of even. Steady Eddie, just it'll, they may win six games, then they'll win eight, then they'll win seven, and they'll win nine, and they may win six again. You know, sort of like, yeah, it's just gonna be that's just sort of what gonna be what they are.
I want to sell, maybe not right now, but at least I think some point this season, I think I'm selling West Virginia stock. I think that with Will Grier and David Sills back, with the, you know, all the experience and as explosive as that offense can be, I think that the value on West Virginia is going to get pretty high, and I don't know if it's the kind of thing that can be sustained.
I like that, and I also got to wonder too, just like Alex Grinch getting, you know, the Ohio State come calling, you got to wonder how long Tony Gibson's gonna be there,
and what happens when he leaves.
Right Really good D coordinator. Does he get a head coaching opportunity? Does he get, you know, does he get the call at like an Alabama, or not, you know, probably not an Alabama, but it's just sort of a one of the real blue bloods come calling and say, hey, here's $1.5 million, can be our D coordinator. I think that's on the horizon as well. So yes, I like you. I like that a little bit too. I think there's some opportunity there to short it. And I'll give you another one. I'm selling Louisville.
Oh man. fair. Yeah, totally. I don't.
Right.
How much stock did you have?
I mean, someone made some money on Louisville with the Lamar Jackson run. You know, it was. I guess it kind of ran and then dipped late in the season both years a little bit, but Brian Van Gorder, defensive coordinator, later hires, uninspiring.
Yes,
that was after an uninspiring hire of Peter Sermon last cycle. Lamar Jackson is gone. I just wonder if Bobby Petrino's shtick has run a little thin. And I just, it doesn't feel like they're on the verge of anything right now.
Well, it's very possible though that we could be in one of those positions where there's not the demand for Bobby Petrino.
Right.
You know, where he just kind of ends up, that's his spot. Like,
right.
Like these Louisville teams are just going to go 7-5, 8-4. They're going to have some dastardly offensive play calling and some like mind-blowingly bad defensive breakdowns.
Like, yeah.
Like,
Brian Van Gorder's like was just a bad defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. And I don't understand. Like, to me, that's a late, like, I don't know. They probably have a relationship. But that's a lazy hire. There's hot, young, and coming good coaches out there you can hire, and you go hire Brian Van Gorder.
Yeah. You know what their relationship is? I think he worked on Petrino's Falcons staff.
Yeah.
Great times too.
That's good karma.
Yeah. I know that it's got a high price, but I'm hoping that it might have taken a dip because of the loss of the Heisman Trophy winner. But I'm buying Oklahoma.
I'm on it, brother. Give me some OU stock.
Like I look everywhere and I don't see any signs that this team is going to slow down.
And another just sort of recruiting element to this, I really, really like the defensive class that they just brought in.
Awesome.
And as I look at OU right now as one of those teams who is like, when you look at their class and if you sort of go like player by player, they're always a little better than you remember them. Like they're all like this point being like, I think this staff evaluates really well. Like they, you know, as you sort of compare their classes to others and you know, you kind of look at some people's class, you're like, oh man, that guy's overrated. Like we gotta get that fixed. Or we gotta, you know, this guy was overhyped, just, you know, got his ranking off a bunch of offers, et cetera, et cetera. When you look at OU's class, it's a bunch of guys that didn't necessarily have the hype, but you feel like they're underrated. And so, like, I think that's a good indicator. You know, you look at what they brought in this year, Ronnie Perkins, Jalen Redmond, Ron Tatum, Michael Thompson, like a bunch of really, really good defensive linemen. And then the other factor here is the quarterback position. And you know Lincoln Riley has got this sort of a quarterback guru, but he's got guys that are such good fits for his system. Kyler Murray coming back this year. You know, I really like the guy they brought in this class, Tanner Mordecai out of Waco, Texas. They just know what they're doing. They know what they wanted. They know what they're looking for. They attack it. They find it. I just think the roster is going to be really talented. And I think Lincoln Riley is the real deal, and I'm with you. I'm ready to steal a little bit of value out of that one.
I was asked, you know, talking about Oklahoma, and I was like, man, Marquise Brown was a sophomore this year. CeeDee Lamb was a freshman. Rodney Anderson was a sophomore. Trey Sermon's a freshman. Like Kyler Murray, already an elite athletic talent, is stepping into a situation where he does have the playmaking potential to be one of those showstoppers, but I don't think he needs to be. He's just got to distribute and make the right decisions.
No question. And I think that's going to be the challenge from a coaching standpoint is like, what I remember him from Texas A&M was just this guy like who just sort of ran wild and just every play was sort of a jailbreak
football.
Where he just tried, I just tried to backyard football it. And they're going to need to, over the last couple of years, you know, the hope is that he's learned to operate within the system. But if they can, you know, if they can get that out of him, then man, it's going to be, they're going to be fun to watch. Remember the name Jalen Redmond.
Okay.
Defensive end out of Oklahoma City. Just a freak, man. And I think he's got a chance to be really good on that defensive line.
I've got a couple more. What do you have?
Those are all my stock. Those are all my buys, my buy recommendations. There's a couple that I sort of flirted with selling. I'm kind of flirting with selling Kansas State.
Writing on the wall kind of thing.
Yeah. And Bill Snyder, just like, I don't know. It seems like there's some messiness on the horizon there.
Yeah.
I think next year they kind of bring back everyone. So I think next year they should be pretty good, but I'm kind of thinking long term here. Just something doesn't smell right there. I'm tempted to buy BYU. Like I have BYU as a sell, but I'm tempted to like buy, expecting it to drop even further. And then when they get a new coach, you know, the price goes back up because I don't think Kalani Sitake is the answer. And then I kind of flirted with selling Oklahoma State too.
I did. But you know what it was? I looked at the rest of the market, and even with Matt Campbell, you know, showing good signs at Iowa State, you know, if I'm selling West Virginia, I'm not going to be buying Texas Tech. I'm not going to be buying Kansas State. I just think that even with me expecting an Oklahoma State drop off, I still think Mike Gundy is a good enough coach, and that team has been good enough for long enough that even the drop off isn't gonna like they're not gonna become a bottom half of the conference team.
Right. That's what held me up. It's just, look, man, Mike Gundy he's been beating the odds for long enough at Oklahoma State. Like, why think that just because OU and Texas are about to be good that he can't, that he can't keep it running? So I held off there. What was your reason for selling on Michigan State? Not that I disagree. I'm just kind of curious.
I was looking at the recruiting rankings kind of dropping off a little bit, and even knowing that some of the best players from their last couple classes have ended up getting kicked off the team.
Right.
I think the talent, I think Mark D'Antonio is still a great coach, and I think that this season was like a really good rally the troops season for the Spartans. But, I think I even made some, bragging money between us trying to side with Sparty several times this season. But I my eyes don't lie. That team was not a fantastic football team.
Right.
So I kind of think that being a really well coached, not as talented, maybe, they do have good development, but man, especially as we're starting to talk about buying Big Ten West teams, there's just the easier wins are going to start evaporating, I think.
That's true. Yeah. So I don't hate that one at all. And obviously there's some off the field issues that they're going to have that Mark D'Antonio is going to have to deal with as well. We'll see if he can survive that. I don't really feel like I have any insight one way or the other on that, but certainly it's a distraction, and the program's got some negative energy lately. So we'll see.
So here's my last consult with your advisor, because my thought is sell, but I don't have a good idea for the market value here. Florida State.
I guess it depends on what the price is.
That's what I'm saying. What are we expecting from Florida State? Because I don't think that we're talking. I think that while there is a chance that we see a spark and we see some big wins and we see some, instant energy, I think that when it comes to totaling win-loss records, I think that I'm predicting that there will be a learning curve before Florida State is able to wrestle that division away from Clemson, and before they can wrestle the conference, not only away from Clemson, but away from Miami, which is a team that I feel like I've just been riding a buy on that one for a while.
Yeah, I would lean buy on Florida State, though, only because I think Willie Taggart is the right fit there. They're going to recruit really well, in my opinion. And I think look, when you still look at the team talent composite and what's actually on the roster and what they've recruited, Florida State's still loaded.
Yeah.
It's not like that. I think this year was just a unique, fluky kind of year. All those games were close. It's sort of like, Notre Dame went 4-8 or whatever, and all those games were close. And then they went this year and added a couple new coaches that added some discipline defensively. And all of a sudden, they win in those games. And so I think that could happen at Florida State very quickly too. Willie Taggart's got a quarterback room that's talented. So I think Florida State's going to be back on track pretty quickly.
So, all right. So I would say buy if anyone's trying to price me at a point where we're like below 10-2, but I think that we are still, and then maybe the answer is buy. And then you take your 10-2 and you wait for the 12-0, which you figure is going to be coming eventually.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I agree.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm a buy on Miami. I don't see anyone. I thought about selling Virginia Tech, but I don't even know what the price is there.
I thought they had a pretty good recruiting class this year.
They got the right guys.
Yeah, exactly. And, not only that, but
who's that linebacker from Shelby? They got a really good one.
Dax Hollyfield.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, they're and I trust Justin Fuente I just, you know, soft spoken, but gets the job done. I trust a coach like that.
Word. All right. Well, I hope that we've given out a good collection of stock tips to carry into the off season.
I wish we could make some real money on this thing, dude.
It's called over under win totals.
You're right. This year I'm putting real money out there.
Yeah, and you know that we'll be hitting those. That was how we got started.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Barton, this is great. Good stuff. We will link back very soon. You know, catch up because we got spring practice. Duke's already in spring practice. I know. Couple teams are already getting after it, but you know, as those storylines start to creep out, we'll be here giving you all the insights that you need to know. Barton, thank you very much.
All right, man.